Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank and the 20K Good Business Giveaway. Submit a video explaining how your business does good by October 24th for a chance to win $20,000. Rules and restrictions apply. Member FDIC. Visit efirstbank.com/business contest.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, celebrating 20 years of bringing the outdoors to Colorado Radio, here's Terry Wickstrom.
Good morning, and the sun is peeking out. Maybe it'll warm up a little bit. We got some cold weather coming in, and that's gonna change everything for hunting and fishing over the next few weeks, but not necessarily in a bad way. We're going to cover a lot of that today and tell you what's going on. You might find there's some really, really great opportunities. If you're listening, you hear that my voice is a little bit froggy. I got a cold. So joining me in studio is my safety net today is Austin Parr. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, Terry. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're going to cover a lot of ground today. We're going to talk a lot of fishing today.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk some hunting and shooting. But this weather does change things, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, it really can turn some things on, actually, this time of year. So, you know, as a guide and fisherman in this state, this cold weather in the fall is a welcome relief from the heat.
Well, and, you know, in the spring, if you get a cold front where the temperature drops 20 or 30 degrees from what it had been, you know, not night to day, but day to day, you know, it just shuts it down. You get cold fronts, the fish quit being active. But in the fall, it has just the opposite effect. And there's a few things going on. The trout get more comfortable. We'll talk about some of that.
Definitely.
The prey fish become more vulnerable, especially the shad. And that turns on one of the most predictable bites you can capitalize on up and down the Front Range for warm water species.
Absolutely.
So there's just going to be a lot going on and a lot to talk about. We're going to be joined during the course of the program by other anglers, but let's get into this a little bit. First, let's talk about just basic getting out, maybe you taking the kids. Because the waters up and down the Front Range are cooling, they're being stocked with a lot of trout right now.
Definitely.
And the trout that are left over, the bigger trout, the holdover trout, are moving closer to shore because they go, you know, people think, well, I can't catch trout at Chatfield. I can't catch trout at Cherry Creek. During the summer, when that water's warm, those fish are uncomfortable. They go deep, but that's going to change, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, with these cooler temperatures, not only with the trout, but other species will start moving up shallower to eat. But anglers right on the shoreline have a fantastic opportunity to catch some really nice fish across the Front Range. You know, I always talk to folks about Chatfield that, you know, that lake is really a sleeper lake for large trout, and Aurora is well known for a large trout lake. So those fish are going to move from that deeper water out in that main basin up to the shallower areas to look to feed on various prey species, whether it be shad or perch or various aquatic insects. But, you know, shore anglers can have a lot of success going out and fishing in a variety of different ways.
Well, these Front Range lakes have produced, I think for Karen and I both, probably the biggest rainbows we've ever caught. She caught a huge rainbow right off the shore at Carter Lake a couple of years ago. Ronnie Castiglione catches these big rainbows out at Horsetooth. Now, they're starting to be culled out a little bit because they're not stocked very heavily. But the same thing is true, like you said, in Chatfield. I've caught just big, big rainbows in Chatfield. I've caught some nice ones in Cherry Creek, although I don't catch as many big rainbows in Cherry Creek.
No, I think that lake is just a little bit too shallow to be able to really have a lot of big trout hold over. You know, Chatfield on a full year, granted, it's going to be a little bit different when they raise it coming up this next year, but it's roughly 70 feet deep. So those fish have an area to go down and escape that warm temperature, whereas at Cherry Creek, with it only being in the mid-20s as far as depth is concerned, it's just too warm to hold a lot of big trout. But at the same rate, they stock a lot of them this time of year, and if you're looking to just go have some great action, it's a good place to go.
Well, and when they do stock them, unlike Chatfield, where there is some depth, it's hard for those trout to get away from some of the other teeth in the lake, too. I think they become prey fish. And, you know, that's why you have a chance when you're fishing for those trout. You might catch a big walleye or something in the same area as that, or a big catfish even.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we actually caught a trout the other day out there that had some pretty significant marks on his underside. So it definitely wasn't a bird, but some other species tried to get at him. So it's definitely true.
So if somebody came in, by the way, Austin, you're from a Discount Tackle. Tell people where it's located.
Yeah, we're just south of Evans on the west side of Santa Fe. So, you know, pretty centrally located as far as Denver is concerned.
And you guide on all these front lakes.
I do, yes. So we have been really taking advantage of this bite.
So let's talk right now. If somebody, well, we're going to talk about the walleyes. Excuse me. But let's talk about this bite. Somebody came in the store right now, wanted to go trout fishing. Which places would you send them, and what would you set them up with?
So Aurora is one of my favorites in the metro area. It offers really good trout fishing out there with some nice sized fish. You know, additionally, Chatfield firing off here can be really good, especially once the water temperature cools after this cold front over the next 5 or 6 days here. But in general, a second rod stamp is the first thing that I try and make sure somebody has, because you can go out there and throw a bait line, whether it be something like a dough bait, for, you know, power bait type dough bait, or switching over to some live minnows. You know, you can catch a variety of different species on something like a live minnow, so it's one of my favorite ways to go as far as casting a bait line out. But then secondarily, throwing something you know, like a Castmaster or a Johnson Splinter Spoon can be really good, something that offers a little bit better casting distance. Now, the other thing that I like to talk about is the fact that these trout are very seasoned on eating shad, so fishing something that's generally shad colored, flashy, tends to do better rather than thinking about fishing up in the mountains where you're throwing, you know, a little brown trout imitation or something. So going more shad oriented is a really good way to go.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. And I also like, if you're specifically going after the trout, the power bait you mentioned, actually, you can't chum in Colorado.
No.
But power bait does chum. It's legal, though, because you're putting it on a hook. That scent is going to get in the water. And now you fish your other lure around there, and it's attracting fish. You'll get some of that with bait, too. And if you're not going to use that or a live minnow, then a nightcrawler.
Sure.
That nightcrawler, because if there's perch and the trout will eat it, a bass will eat it, a walleye will eat it. So you're right. One bait line. And do you tell them to fish that bait on the bottom or below a bobber, or depending?
It all depends upon the you know, the specific time of year. You know, if you're having, you know, late summer, or excuse me, late fall here, where you're having fish that are up high, especially once they've got stocked, you know, a float can be really productive. And also, if you're fishing in areas where there's any type of rocks, particularly a slip bobber can work really well, because you can hold your bait right in the perfect position and even fish things like small ice jigs tipped with a mealworm or a waxworm and do really well, you know, especially if you have any type of wind or anything right along the edges of your shoreline. But if you're on more of a sandy bottom, especially if the water temperature is still just a little bit warmer, going more on a bottom rig is a pretty good way to go, just because you're being able to focus on those fish that aren't necessarily up high in the water column.
And I think you're absolutely right. Let's move on, and we'll cover this more later, but I want to start touching on the warm water species too, especially fish like walleyes, wipers, that, excuse me, these shad, what happens, folks, is when these temperatures drop, these shad, first of all, they're starting to school up for the fall anyway, and they may come shallow to feed on plankton and things like that.
Yep.
But once these temperatures start to drop, they become very vulnerable and stressed. In fact, a lot of them die.
Yes, they
do. And they become very vulnerable. How do you approach that when that's happening?
Well, right now, we're still seeing a lot of shad that are fairly spread out at the moment. They aren't in really big schools, you know, so it's really separating these walleyes out a lot over the course of the water. Now, when it gets colder, it's going to force these shad closer to the bottom, and they're going to school up even heavier. So when that happens, I'm going to be throwing things like jigging wraps, blade baits, and jigging spoons to these fish. So you and I have certainly talked before, and the jigging wrap is one of my absolute favorite ways to catch fish throughout the season. But in the fall, it really does excel. So you can, you know, really imitate a dying bait fish extraordinarily well utilizing one of those jigging wraps. And then the other thing that you can do as well is, when you have a lot of bait fish in the water, there's so much food for these fish to eat. They're not necessarily eating out of hunger, but if you can get them to react to something, it is so, so productive, because those fish aren't necessarily biting something like a live minnow that's sitting out there. But if you snap a jigging spoon or a jigging wrap past their face, it's just an instinctual reaction to be able to go and swipe at those baits.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's been a funny fall.
Really has.
Usually by this year, even if we have warmer days, The nights have been cooler, mm-hmm. and we've seen the water cool down more than it has. So we've been slow into this transition. In fact, you were on the water this week. What were you seeing before this cold front came in?
Well, water temperatures in the afternoon are in the neighborhood of 65 degrees at the moment. So that's uncharacteristically warm for the first part of October. And it's making the bite a little bit difficult at the moment. Granted, you know, we are seeing some really nice fish mixed in, but in general, these fish are so spread out that it's tough to really pinpoint a large group of them. You know, I'm utilizing my sonar as usual, but instead of, you know, looking for a big pile or stack of fish, you're marking two or three fish here and there. They just aren't really stacked up. So it's a lot of casting, a lot of moving, and a lot of what we kind of call strolling as well, where we're able to utilize a blade bait or a jigging wrap and use my trolling motor to cover some ground rather than sitting and casting on a specific area. So you can move and find active fish over a long expanse rather than just on one specific spot.
Now, I think probably we're going to see that change with
Definitely.
This cold weather. Not only will the fish... They may be attracted to a spot because the bait fish may be gathered against a point or a hump, but what you're really going to be looking for going into these next few weeks on your sonar are actually balls of shad.
Definitely.
And find those shad and do those presentations. You talked about the fact that reaction bite. Tom Bruno and I were down at Pueblo, and this should start taking off. We'll talk more about that later in the show. But the spoon bite is very predictable down there.
It really is.
And we were doing an article for In Fisherman. I was writing an article, and we were down there. There was three of us in the boat. And we were catching both walleyes and wipers and an occasional smallmouth bass on jigging spoons, flea fly jigging spoons. They're about half-ounce jigging spoon.
Yep.
And as fast as we could jig them. We had some shiners we brought with. They were almost the same size as the schooling shad.
Uh-huh.
We took one of those shiners and put it down and pinned it right where those fish were with a weight. So it was swimming freely right where those fish were eating. Never got hit once. And we continued to catch fish on those spoons.
I've seen the same exact thing. You know, people are so accustomed to walleye fishing with bait throughout the entire summer that a lot of my clients will even question me when I don't have any bait in the boat and we're fishing artificials all day. Whereas, you know, you have to really remind them that, okay, if you go and put a slip bobber down on this same type of a spot here, finding active fish, that slip bobber with a shiner is probably not going to catch very many fish for you over the course of the day. Whereas a jigging wrap or a jigging spoon or a blade that's ripped or worked along the bottom even a little bit can outperform a live bait presentation 10-1.
And I think even before these shad were schooling up, you probably were doing well with crankbaits.
We were. And those fish, they were, you know, they're up higher in the water column. Those shad were right up near the surface. And those walleyes were picking them off right underneath the surface. And instead of trolling a little bit deeper like you would normally do, we were running these baits behind planer boards at a ridiculously close distance. So, I mean, even 10 feet back from some of these planer boards with those shad up higher in the water column. But now these fish are sliding down a little bit more into the water column, and the trolling bite has not been nearly as effective, and that typically runs true this time of year.
Before we run out of time here, I understand you got one or two pretty decent walleyes this last week, too.
We did.
What kind of size are you talking about?
Well, we were fortunate enough a couple of days ago to stick a 29.5-incher out of Cherry Creek. So it
a 29.5-incher at Cherry Creek is probably, what, an 11-pound fish because they're so fat.
A thick fish, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you normally think a 30-inch fish is about 10 pounds.
Yeah.
But the way they eat at Cherry Creek is probably 11 or 12, I mean, because they have big bellies on them.
Yeah, she was a big fish, and, you know, we got a quick picture of her and sent her right back. And, you know, the interesting thing about this fish actually as well is she had a clipped fin from this spring on her tail. So she was part of the spawning operation this year. So.
That's awesome. I might take test. We'll ask you later in the show maybe how you caught that. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk to a couple of the parks people about a couple subjects. And then we're going to talk more fishing. Brad Peterson's going to join us. We've got other guests joining us. And Austin and I are going to talk more fishing on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan. Terry Wickstrom Outdoors is brought to you in part by Sun Power Sports, Colorado's largest ATV and motorcycle dealer. I have Austin Parr in studio with me. We're wrapping up this week's show. Austin, we, We were going to talk more hunting, but Nate was busy harvesting a pronghorn, so we talked a lot of fishing. But it's probably appropriate that we did because, first of all, no matter what's going on in the fall, a lot of fishermen have put their boats and their gear away for the season. A lot of people, their kids are in sports, they're sports fans, they're spending the weekends watching sports, and a lot of avid anglers are avid hunters, so they're
absolutely
in the field. And so right now is some of the best fishing of the year, and it's not nearly as crowded. You don't have to put up with as much boat traffic. These cool days, you're not going to have the jet skiers and the wakeboarders out, and everybody needs to recreate. The lakes are for everybody, but it's just the ideal time, and this weather is going to trigger some great fishing.
It really is, and especially when you talk about the conventional aspect of things as far as the fishing is concerned. These lakes really aren't crowded at all right now. I mean, we'll go out there on a Saturday or a Sunday right now, especially tomorrow. If you can get out there while the Broncos are playing and then the Rockies in the afternoon, it's going to be a ghost town as far as fishermen are concerned. So you can go out there tomorrow and have some great success. And then, you know, at the same time, a lot of other anglers are pursuing, you know, a lot of your trout and your salmon that are running right now, which is a really nice thing. So if you're looking to get on some great fishing, this is the best time of year, in my opinion.
You know, we didn't even get to that, but you said you heard that there's a lot of salmon running in the Dream Stream right now.
There are, yeah, up there. There's a great run going on right now above Blue Mesa up on the Gunnison. There's a ton of salmon up there right now, and we're starting to see some really nice brown trout in all your classic spots. So, you know, especially on the Dream Stream, I've seen a couple of fish that have been really nice lately.
Well, you know, people, they get kind of, where are they snagging the salmon? They want to just go fill with meat. But I'll tell you what, if you go with a fly rod or a conventional rod and just go and catch some of those salmon. A lot of these places are catch and release no matter what you catch.
Yes.
So you're going to fight those salmon, and you're going to catch some nice browns, some big rainbows that are up chasing the browns' eggs.
Absolutely.
And you can just have, you know, especially if you're a fly fisherman, if you've never gone after those salmon and those big trout in the river when the salmon are running and those eggs are everywhere, fantastic fly fishing.
It's a really unique experience for sure. It's amazing to walk up on a hole and see a hole turn that crimson red color. It's something that is unlike anything else in this state, at least.
When I was years ago, I also used to write a column for Mile High Sports Magazine. I wrote their outdoor column. And I remember one of the columns that really got a lot of attraction from people. I talked about being in a river and feeling the salmon hitting my waders. And, you know, as you got into the article, everybody thought I was probably in Alaska or something.
Yep.
I was on the Dream Stream.
Yep.
And those salmon were coming, and I could feel them pelting my legs as they were coming up the river, you know. And it's just, it's amazing. And then if you want to go, like, below Green Mountain and some places where you can keep them.
Yeah.
Even where you can snag, I'd much rather, even if I'm going to smoke them, I'd rather catch them on a rod and reel. It's just so much, you know, conventional tackle.
Yeah, and it's still quite productive as well. I mean, you can just run, you know, we mentioned slip bobbers a couple of times today, but a slip bobber with a little atomic teaser tube jig from Berkeley is a fantastic choice. You know, pick one that's in a bright orange or a bright pink type color and tip it with a wax worm or a mealworm where permitted, and that can be a great option. And we've also had a lot of success before stripping clouser minnows. So chartreuse and pink clouser minnows, you know, chartreuse and white and pink and white, that can be a really good technique. And you can even throw jerk baits at some of these as well. So you can get some smaller, you know, cutter type baits from Berkeley, you know, some of the cutter 90s and some of the brighter colors, and suspend those right out in front of those salmon, and those big males will eat those out of aggression.
Well, yeah, the salmon are consuming their own body. So
yep,
they're not in a feeding mode. It's totally a reaction bite when they're turning red. That's true here as it is in Alaska or Canada or anywhere where there's salmon. You know, they get to have one date in their life and then they die.
Yep.
But they're so it's all reaction. But it's just, they're phenomenal fighters because you're getting this four-year-old salmon in there. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. But you know, we heard that Spinney is on fire for huge trout. They're catching both on a fly rod and spoons. It's just fantastic. Antero's fishing incredibly well for numbers of fish. And you're going to find that true throughout the mountain lakes. Talked to Bernie last week. Granby is just going to be on fire. Those fish are moving shallow right now, especially with this cooler weather. These are the days when you can go from shore or a boat and catch, even if you're an average angler, you catch 30, 40 lake trout.
Absolutely. And I mean, places we mentioned Granby there, but even like Jefferson Lake can be a really good choice. You know, another spot that's at really high elevation. situation, and a lot of people are going to start ignoring that. So, you know, your summertime crowds are gone, but any of those type of lakes like that are all going to be having big trout move in, no matter the trout.
And it's going to be, and trout, we started the show by talking about trout right here on the Front Range, and they're stocking, you know, they tend not to stock heavily on the Front Range lakes because the water gets so warm in the summer. They'll stock early in the spring. And even the small ponds and things, a lot of the smaller lakes and ponds, they're filling them with trout. St. Vrain's a great example of
Absolutely
this. They're going to fill those with trout right now, so that from now till freeze up, so that those will hold over for ice fishing.
Yep.
But in the meantime, the shore fishing, because the water is cooling, and whether it's Cherry Creek, Aurora, Chatfield, or St. Vrain or Boyd, those trout are going to move close to shore. And you can take the kids out. You can have some power bait. You can throw some spoons. You can just make a day of it on a nice day, and you catch a number of trout, take a few home for the pan, and just have a great time.
It really is a great time for kids. And, you know, you talk about taking kids out pan fishing all the time. People always want to ask me, okay, well, where can I go to take my kid out to catch some little crappies or bluegills? Well, a lot of times I'll turn them around, especially this time of year, and say, well, instead of doing that, go and target some of these stock trout, because they are so cooperative and they're so abundant with the state putting these in that it's a really good opportunity.
Just go read the stocking report.
Yeah.
On my Facebook page, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on Facebook, we put the fishing report every week, and that includes a link to the stocking report. You can go see where they've put these fish. My neighbor watches the stocking report in Fort Collins. Soon as they stock City Park, he's down there with his daughter catching trout.
Yeah.
And they do extremely well.
Yeah.
So you can do that. But, you know, I don't want to leave without talking again too about the warm water species. It's been a crazy fall where, I mean, I've gone out to target the white bass and ended up largemouth bass fishing and they've been wonderful. I've gone after the walleyes and ended up with white bass. It's been tough to predict the type of bites you're going to get, but I think we've got a couple weeks of cold weather now. We're going to see probably a 5 to 10 degree temperature drop in these lakes. That's going to stress these bait fish. It's going to make them gather up, be very vulnerable. And lakes like Cherry Creek, Chatfield, Pueblo, Boyd, and the southeastern lakes like John Martin and those lakes out there, the fishing is just going to be on fire for the rest of the year, really.
It really is. And I mean, these walleyes, they can sense that cold weather coming along with the shad dying, obviously, but they are looking to feed right now. And they're going to be trying to put on as much weight as they can. And going and doing those same techniques, you know, your jigging wraps and your blade baits and your jigging spoons and your snap jigs, all to get those fish to react to that, can be so productive. And then once again, mimicking your bait fish population with whatever type of lure you're looking to throw. So if you're looking to go out to Aurora, more of your perch type forage is going to be better. So a Johnny Darter in a yellow perch color or a yellow perch, some form of a jigging spoon, some of the real baits or the crippled herrings can be really good. But then Cherry Creek or Chatfield or Boyd, all your shad style baits. And, you know, a lot of times I'll vary my colors a little bit on that too. So instead of going all my standard chrome and black type colors, I'll go to more of a glow or a white or even, you know, a chrome and blue, just to change everything up a little bit. And sometimes I find that that's really effective as well.
You know, right now, if you just wanted to catch fish, if you're willing to make the drive down to the southeast, John Martin, if the white bass down there are so prolific, and while you're fishing for them, you're going to catch sawguys up to probably 25 inches.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you're going to catch, if you just are somebody who wants to take a group of people or your family and just go catch fish, even if you stay in Pueblo, because it's a bit of a drive from here. But John Martin is just, if you can't catch a white bass at John Martin Reservoir right now, take up bowling.
Might as well quit fishing.
Yeah, I mean, it's and you say that, and you can get bad fishing anytime. The fish don't always cooperate.
Yeah.
But it's just an incredible opportunity, and you're going to catch sawguys while you're doing it.
Absolutely, and nice ones, too. And the thing about that lake as well is, although there is more water than we've had in some of the other drought years, the water level has been drawn down, and once again, it's going to concentrate those fish. Those white bass are going to be boiling on your bait fish out there. Your sawguys aren't going to be very far behind, and you know it's another place that a gulp minnow, as with many places in this state, is quite productive.
There's a few baits they hear us talk about a lot, isn't it? A gulp minnow, a jigging wrap Johnny Darter type bait, a blade bait. You know, folks, we use them because they work. And
pay attention to that, because it's legitimately what we're utilizing.
Yeah, they work. Hey, so if people want to just meet you, or if they want to book a trip with you, tell people how they find you.
So I'm always down at Discount Fishing Tackle. We're just south of Evans on the west side of Santa Fe. So I'm down there. Unless I'm guiding, that's pretty much where I am residing. But otherwise, my phone number is 303-514-5546. And you can also get a hold of me on social media as well.
And if you just stop by Discount Tackle, you're always there to share information and show them the lures we talk about.
Yeah, I mean, we're regionally based down there. I'm the one doing all the buying, so I'm out there guiding, and I'm putting the correct inventory on the shelves.
All right. You know what you use and what works. It's going to wrap things up for this week. We talked a lot of fishing. We're going to talk some more hunting as we get into the fall, too. We're gonna have Ed Gorman on in the next couple weeks. We're going to go over the pheasant population in the state and the quail. We're hearing some optimistic reports, so we're very excited about that. But folks, if you love to fish, there's so many opportunities right now to get out and enjoy it. Follow me on Facebook, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on Facebook. A lot of the information on this show gets posted there. In addition, my column gets posted on Facebook, and any new additions to our YouTube channel gets posted. Thanks to Kyle for keeping this running, Karen for keeping me in line, Austin for joining us. We are listening to Terry Wickstrom. We'll let the music, the Eagles, take us to the top of the hour and 104.3 The Fan.
Does your business make a positive impact on its community, customers, or employees? First Bank invites you to submit a 2-minute video explaining how you and your business do good for a chance to win $20,000 and a marketing campaign courtesy of First Bank. Doing good can be donating proceeds to charity, being environmentally sustainable, providing gym memberships for your employees, and so much more. If this describes your business, submit your video by October 24th. First Bank. Business banking for good. Rules and restrictions apply. Member FDIC. Visit efirstbank.com/businesscontest for more details.